With racial tension exploding in places like Baltimore, Charlotte, and Ferguson, what can be done to keep that from happening here in Jacksonville? That conversation just ahead. Good morning. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, we'll take your calls on the anger and unrest around the country over police shootings of unarmed black men at 549-2937. Later, if you've been seeing some guys walking around town this week wearing pink, there's a reason. We'll tell you about it. The Symphony's new season begins this weekend. We'll check in with music director and conductor Courtney Lewis. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, Charlotte, North Carolina is the latest American city to be roiled by anger and protests after a controversial incident caught on video showing police officers shooting an African-American man. The protests in Charlotte have played out in cities around the country over the last few years as the Black Lives Matter movement has gained steam and at the same time, pushback. Here in Jacksonville, controversial police shootings like that of Vernell Bing Jr. in Springfield have also sparked some protests, although they haven't been as large, and there is concern that tensions in Jacksonville could erupt at some point, too. Award-winning JU sociologist and author Nathan Rousseau is a member of the city's Human Relations Commission, and he also teaches about the approaches taken by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X. His book, Society Explained, was a top 25 American Library Association winner. Rousseau joins us now with his thoughts on Ferguson, Baltimore, Charlotte, and Jacksonville. Good morning.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. What are your thoughts about the controversy erupting in Charlotte and other American cities over police shootings of what appear to be, and the video shows to be, unarmed African-American civilians? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, weigh in on Facebook. Dr. Rousseau, Charlotte, the latest city to be caught up in this, as city leaders call for calm, call for reconciliation, dialogue. The investigation is ongoing, as Charlotte police tell the public and the media that the officer involved in this latest incident believed that the man that was shot was holding a weapon, something his family has disputed. We've seen this play out over and over again in this country in the last few years, and it has in part sparked the Black Lives Matter movement. You've been looking at this. What are your thoughts as we see the situation in Charlotte?
There are so many factors going on here that are contributing to this just horrible situation around the country. Out of control, guns are part of it. Economic inequality is part of it. I would say lack of leadership at the top is part of it. All of these things are playing themselves out. Mm-hmm. We have about 1% of the population that controls about 50% of the country's resources, which means that 99% of the population has to essentially fight over the remaining 50%. It produces a very fierce competition, and with that very fierce competition, it plays itself out as it always has in American history, which is mm-hmm. the most vulnerable getting the least. And I think that's where we're at today, where the most vulnerable populations are being asked to do more with less and less. And I think that's playing itself out here. What the police are being asked to do is also to do more and more with less. We're asking them to take on more and more roles that I'm not sure it's their job to do.
Let's explain that in more detail.
Well, there are certain things that I think local, state, and federal government should be in the job of taking care of. And when you have the amount of single parents living in poverty, with children not being taken care of, with schools that I think are in bad shape, ongoing structural racism, You're basically getting a situation where, again, vulnerable populations are very frustrated. They want a share in the country's bounty. They want equality of opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud that this country has elected its first African American president. I think that's great. I wish that more had been done under his watch to promote equality of opportunity, which I think we are in sorely need of.
So you see income inequality as being perhaps not an obvious driver, but a major factor in some of the unrest we're seeing, racial unrest, economic tensions. You see that as a bigger driver than perhaps people are tying this to.
Absolutely. There is lack of opportunity for people. There's certainly plenty of goods out there that people want to buy and have, and that's very understandable. But let's face it, the majority of Americans are living in debt. The majority of Americans are very stressed. And they're stressed, and there are fewer and fewer programs going on for people. I can talk about it very locally in terms of Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a beautiful city, but it really has a dearth of parks that are well taken care of, youth centers, community pools, after school programs. It's lack of incentivizing poor neighborhoods. The quality of life in Jacksonville could be significantly higher than it is. I think the mayor is doing an okay job, but he is not living up to One City, One Jacks.
In what way?
Well, he's more about platitudes than action. In terms of the infrastructure of the city, year in and year out, you go downtown, and in my opinion, it always looks the same.
What would you say to the argument the mayor's office has made? They just successfully passed a pension referendum that will help in paying down the city's pension debt.
Yeah.
That the mayor has made, that we can't attack some of these other pressing financial problems until that situation is resolved. And it has been resolved. Now we'll have to see how the freed up funds will be allocated.
Yeah, well, see, that's his job. That's his job, to handle multiple tasks. I mean, I'm a professor, and my job is to do multiple tasking. Most people multitask, and that's his job. And really, that's getting back to that. There is a crisis at all with pension plans for the people who are on the front lines, whether they're police officers, whether they're the fire department, or whether they're teachers. The people who are on the very front lines of our society are the ones who are being asked to tighten their belts. And so now envision a population that have jobs or no jobs that are less secure than the police, the fire folks, and teachers. Are they not going to be frustrated? Sure they are.
Charlotte was taken aback by the rioting and protests that erupted after a shooting incident there. It had followed on the heels of another one in Charlotte a couple of years ago that hadn't gotten as much attention. We've had controversial incidents in Jacksonville.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts or concerns about whether Jacksonville could see the same type of unrest?
I think it's a real possibility. I mean, with as you mentioned at the beginning, I'm on the Human Rights Commission, and this is definitely a topic of concern for us, and to address these kinds of things. I will say that on Friday, there's going to be a civil rights symposium at the Coastal School of Law, and the Human Rights Commission is organizing an event that will be November 10th on fostering police community relations, and these are events that are open to the public. It's really good for people to think about these things, and I certainly encourage people to engage in these things. But I think that we need to look at issues of education, structural racism, more seriously than we do. I think we need to move away from platitudes and get real.
Lots of calls. Let's begin with Alex in Avondale. Hi, Alex. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, I had a question. I was wondering about, as far as pushing like de-escalation reform, I worked in a mental hospital for a couple of years, and that was something where we always, you know, tried to de-escalate the situation before it got out of hand. And I was wondering, why do you think there's not more of a push to push de-escalation reform? Because in my mind, it seems like something where it would cost taxpayers less money over the course of time, just because you're having less, you know, wrongful death lawsuits and other things like that.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. Sheriff Mike Williams, I think the last time he appeared on this program, he talked about that and how JSO and other law enforcement agencies around the country are really trying to embrace that more fully, so that we have less incidents like what we've been seeing. And part of the reason, Doctor, that they become so controversial, such flashpoints, is they're caught on video. And that leads to the other discussion, which is that police departments are looking more aggressively at the use of their own body cameras so that they can tell their story as well.
Well, I have to say that I applaud what Mike Williams is doing. I know that he is making a concerted effort. He is reaching out. He is going out and meeting with people. And I think that is a very, very important thing to do. And I really applaud his efforts in reaching out to communities. You know, and in partly in response to what the caller said, you know, it's part of our MO as a country that we don't tend to deal with prevention. We tend to deal with cleanup.
Vicki is on the South Side. Hi, Vicki. Good morning. How are you?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I agree with the previous caller that police officers need to have more de-escalation training. But rather than talking about economics and all the other problems with race in the country, it seems to me that people in general aren't offended enough that the police shoot people routinely for very minor crimes. It seems like this policy of shooting people, white people, black people, really started after 9/11, when the police were given all this gear from Homeland Security. They got things that were designed to take care of terrorist problems, since we don't have any terrorist problems in Jacksonville, supposedly. It seems like they use that equipment on the citizens. And I'm just very concerned with the fact that police officers, you know, I was listening, I think it was to the Diane Rehm show the other day, and somebody called in and they said, you know, I used to be a cop and I wasn't afraid to take a punch. You know, I'd scrap with somebody if I had to, but I didn't ever shoot anybody because they threw a punch at me. Police officers nowadays really aren't willing to do that. And I'm not sure that if I was a police officer, I would be willing to do it either, but it seems like they sure are willing to pull the trigger. And that just, when did that change? When did that culture change?
Thanks, Vic. Thanks, Vicki. Okay. Thanks, Vicki.
Well, I think
Nathan Rousseau.
I think that the caller's point is well made, and a number of people have made this point, which is that the police today are certainly armed better than they ever have. The case could also be made that so are civilians, and in certain cases, civilians are armed better than the police.
Could you make the argument that perhaps it might be hard to tease this out in any data, but are police more likely to shoot because they perceive that the people that they're approaching are also more likely to be armed?
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, not condoning what some police are doing it's important to recognize that police are human beings, and my guess is that some of them do not handle themselves very well in a crisis situation. I know that's their job and that's what they're supposed to do, but they're people too. This goes to the larger issue of how much is arming ourselves a satisfactory and safe thing to do? Is there a point at which more and more arms in public is no longer safe, but more and more of a threat to everyone?
Let's go to Mark in St. Augustine. Hello, Mark. Thanks for holding. You're on the air. Hey, Mark.
Hey, good morning. If I recall correctly, out in Oklahoma, when the gentleman was shot out there by the female policewoman, if the video was correct, he was walking back towards his truck. And I can't imagine that the police were not hollering, stop, put your hands up, get on your knees, what have you. And I'm not suggesting that the shooting was justified by any stretch. However, when does there become a little bit of personal responsibility on the part of the citizenry to follow and respect the authority that the police have? They don't know what each situation is, but you can bet if a cop asks me to stop, put my hands up, I'm going to stop and put my hands up. So when do we start accepting some responsibility to follow the instructions of law enforcement to an extent there?
Thanks, Mark.
Well, that's a good point. And again, that's another point that a number of people have made.
And let's note, he was careful to say disobeying the police should not get you killed.
Well,
he made that caveat, but go ahead. Yeah.
Well, you know, I think I haven't been pulled over too many times, and, you know, I've been driving for, I don't know, 30, 40 years. And I think I've been pulled over a couple of times in all those years. But the couple of times that I have been, I've been very respectful to the police. I just think that's kind of common sense to do. So I think that's a smart thing to do. But
let me just jump in and say that when I talk to African American colleagues and friends who have children, particularly adolescent boys, uniformly, they will tell you that they have that talk with their sons in particular, and that they live in fear that their sons are going to go out somewhere, get pulled over, that if they make one false move, that they're going to be killed. That is a real fear in the African-American community.
Well, you know, and you add a combination of fear and anxiety and a just...
On both sides.
On both sides, and just a very accessible way of getting lots and lots of weapons. And you get, this is what you get.
Anthony is in Ortega. Hi, Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you very much for taking my call. I want to preface, I want to make four brief points, but I want to preface that I received my pre-doctoral training at Jackson University. I'm proud of the education that I received there. The first brief point I wanted to make was whether or not the situations could occur in Jacksonville. It's possible because it was learned that a lot of these incidents in these cities have occurred when out-of-town rabble-rousers, these troublemakers, are brought in from out-of-town and creating havoc. Second point I'd like to make is that the First Amendment right to assemble and protest message is lost when the populace starts looting and start making it a personal gain thing and looting stores like the NBA store in Charlotte. There's also another point I'd like to make is that on Netflix there's a show called Under Arrest, and it portrays the interdiction of law enforcement in Canada. And their contact model is a lot different. I would sit there and watch, and I would say, boy, that person's going to get shot if they were in America. And the police in Canada, they're in Edmonton and Fort Vancouver, they're trained a little bit differently. And the last point I'd like to make is that Professor Rousseau's argument seemed to, his introduction seems to be prefacing an argument for socialism and totalitarianism by the government. And I'll take my response off the air.
Okay. Thanks for that. Are you calling for that?
I think any time you ask the government to be responsible for things that the population wants the government to be responsible for, some people say socialism. And one of my favorite examples of this is, so do we want FEMA or not? Do we want the federal government to come in when there's a federal emergency or not? If we do, then I guess you could call that socialism. Fine, then let's get rid of it. And when the next hurricane comes to any community, let's not ask the government to come in to clean it up.
Then what is the appropriate governmental role in addressing this real divide and this real tension that is roiling this country? What is the appropriate response?
You know, there is no sweet spot for this. This is an ongoing issue for the United States of America, which is what role should the states versus the federal government play? You know, and what we need to do is look at this as we need to look at this as adults and basically say this is not socialism, this is not capitalism. Essentially, the people who the architects of American society created tensions, and they did this intentionally so that future generations, their argument was that by having separate camps, that we would arrive at the truth, by having people have different ideas and that the truth would emerge. And a part of that division is what role should the states play and what role should the federal government play. But what they expected was that we would not engage in name-calling in the process of trying to reach consensus. As part of this conversation of trying to reach consensus about how to handle our problems, again, typically the most vulnerable populations are the ones who suffer the most. And so we ongoingly have these kinds of issues.
Let's take one more call. It's Lisa in Mandarin. Hello, Lisa.
Hi.
Hey.
Yeah, I'm calling about the issue of police and mental health. And your guest had said that more and more responsibility is being put on the police and the fire department that really isn't theirs. And we've seen after Reagan a lot of defunding of mental health institutions and programs in this country, and more police and fire department are having to step into those situations. And one of the other callers that mentioned, you know, isn't a person responsible when the police are telling them to stop? Well, if that person's mentally ill, they're not going to probably understand what the police are saying to them if they're in the middle of a crisis. And so the de-escalation is one thing that I feel should be strongly looked into, but as well as supporting our mental health programs and maybe more mental health training for the police officers.
Sure, yeah.
And I'll take that off air.
Thank you, Lisa. And, you know, we still don't know. The investigation is ongoing. We don't know the facts yet. However, the video that was released from the family of the man that was killed in Charlotte, you can hear the wife trying to yell at the police that he didn't have a gun and that he had a traumatic brain injury,
yeah.
Which may or may not have affected his behavior, that may or may not have been misinterpreted by the officers. What about Lisa's point?
This goes back to the 1960s, actually, where there was an outcry that we were institutionalizing the mentally ill too much and for life, and that was dehumanizing.
And cruel.
And I think in probably a number of cases that was actually the case. And so what happened was that a lot of people with mental issues were literally put out onto the street. And so there was this huge growth of homelessness among people who are mentally ill. And we have yet, as a society, to take responsibility for what to do with these vulnerable people.
And so let's mention once again the upcoming forum that we'll be looking at civil rights, human rights, right, and race relations in Jacksonville.
Right. There'll be a program this Friday at the Coastal School of Law. It's a civil rights symposium. It'll be from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And the Human Rights Commission is sponsoring an event Thursday, November 10th. This will be in the evening at the Downtown Public Library on fostering police-community relations.
Dr. Nathan Rousseau, JU author and sociologist. His book is Society Explained. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Much more still ahead, from symphony conductor Courtney Lewis to Real Men Wear Pink and more. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Donald Trump has declined to release his tax filings, but Washington Post reporter David Farenthold has looked into Trump's finances and claims about his charitable giving by investigating the Trump Foundation. On the next Fresh Air, we'll talk about what Farenthold has discovered with the help of social media and crowdsourcing. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, all across town right now, prominent men are wearing pink. The Real Men Wear Pink campaign is designed to raise awareness and support for breast cancer research. They are putting on the pink and appealing to the community for the upcoming American Cancer Society Making Strides Against Breast Cancer of Jacksonville event. We are pleased to welcome to the studio participants Adam Jorgensen and Brian Bush. And my, oh my, you should see what these guys have on. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
We are shooting video of this. Look for this later today at or tomorrow, WJCTnews.org. Brian Bush, let's begin with you of the Tom Bush auto dealership family. You are wearing an outfit, I think, that could be seen from space.
That's right. It's a
You have on a bright pink suit, my friend, and you're looking good.
Thank you.
Where'd you get that?
There's actually a company called Oppo Suits, like opposite suits, and they make all sorts of different colors and combinations. It's great.
And what are the reactions you're getting when you go around town in this thing?
I stand out, and that's the goal. I've actually got a sign on the back to a link to my donation page. So
that's right. Now, let's explain how this works. Adam, you've got on a really nice pink polo, and
yes,
you're looking good, too. You actually are the front runner in raising funds among all of the guys in Jacksonville that are participating in Real Men Wear Pink. Can you tell us how this is working?
Yeah, so the whole design of the program is we have 29 men in Jacksonville who have stepped up, community leaders, NFL players, business leaders, who've all stepped up to say, we want to raise more awareness and raise some money to help with our Making Strides Against Breast Cancer event. And so, you know, everybody has their way of going about it. We have some business owners like Pete from Sweet Pete's. We have former Jaguar David Garrard. We have guys like Brian who are going to stand out wherever they go because he's got an amazing outfit and a great plan. For me, my best plan was you know, I work with a lot of people across the country, and so many people have been touched by this disease. And so I just went out to them. I think most people can get a little intimidated by fundraising. And the key is to just go out to the folks you know, explain what you're doing, and ask them to contribute where they can, you know.
Now, would you have worn pink if you were not participating in Real Men Wear Pink? Would this be a color you'd reach for?
I actually already own this shirt.
Oh, okay.
I do now own a couple of additional shirts because we've committed to doing it throughout October, and so we want to have the right rotation. But yeah. I do think we would have, yeah.
Is this a way to kind of deconstruct macho stereotypes too? You
know? Absolutely.
You know, how do you feel about that piece of it?
Yeah, so at our company, we wear a pink polo every Thursday, and we've started this campaign for many years now. So it's trying to break that stigma and have fun with it. So,
and I have to just say that I love seeing this because when I looked at the website to see who was participating in this, it's a really great group of guys. Mm-hmm. Now, is there some friendly competition in the fundraising aspect?
I think so.
Are you trying to keep your lead, Adam?
I'm trying. You know, I was on the road for a week and I didn't move the needle, so I'm back. And Brian and I got here this morning. He got out of the car and he said, "I got a challenge for you. We're going to make something happen." So I love that we have some of the men that are fired up and you know, want to keep this going and grow it.
Do you want to put out a call right now for people to donate a little?
That's right.
How can they donate?
My goal is obviously to beat Adam, so if I surpass him by the end, right before the walk, I will wear a pink dress to the Jaguar game the next day.
Which game is that?
That's the Raiders game.
You're going to wear a pink dress to the Jaguars-Raiders game. We have you on the record.
Yep.
You said it on the radio.
You heard it first.
And now, where are you going to be seen? You know, people need to know where they can find you and take pictures of you and all that.
I'll be in Section 108.
Section 108. Okay.
Yep.
You'll have to look for Brian. And tell me about this pink dress. Where did you buy this pink dress?
I haven't bought it yet. See, I'm...
Oh!
But hopefully I do have to. So again, I have to beat Adam in fundraising by October 22nd. So.
And as much as I don't like to lose, in this case, I might lose by a dollar or two just to make this happen. I think it's a great awareness thing too, just to let everybody know about what's happening, and it's a lot of fun.
Have you ever worn a dress before?
Be honest.
Yes.
Have
it was
you?
For another fundraising event.
Okay. And what was that experience like for you?
It was good.
Okay. Now let's talk about the events coming up, the walk, and also an event at Three Forks. Can you share that with us?
We have an event at Sweet, actually.
Oh, Sweet.
Yep.
Pardon me.
On October 13th is a Thursday. And so we're going to do an event with all the real men. And so we'll have a VIP ticket event where you can get free food and drinks, and you can pledge your ticket event to one of the real men. And so we invite everyone to come out there on October 13th. We will have tickets available now online. If you search the Real Men Drink Pink Jacks event on Facebook, they can purchase tickets there.
And there's a kickoff at Three Forks this Friday night. Or has that already happened?
We already did that one.
You already did that. When is the walk?
The walk is October 22nd, downtown at Hemming Park. There's going to be so much, just so much excitement around that whole day. We've got entertainment. We've got tons of people coming to walk, lots of teams, survivor celebrations. So it's really going to be a fantastic day.
Well, you both look great. Brian Bush, Adam Jorgensen, wearing their pink proudly. Go to the Real Men Wear Pink website and donate. And we will be looking forward to your attire at that football game. That will be really cool.
I hope so.
Yes.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
¶¶ On the next Diane Rehm Show, in the first presidential debate, Republican nominee Donald Trump said he was smart enough not to have paid federal taxes. Tax exemptions for individuals, who pays federal income taxes, who does not, and why. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. The Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's new season kicks off Friday with that incredible music you just heard, Igor Stravinsky's Rite of Spring. We recently spoke with symphony conductor Courtney Lewis about the new season. Take a listen. Courtney Lewis, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Melissa. It's great to see you, as always.
It's good to have you back in town. The symphony is opening up its new Masterworks series Friday, September 30th. What is on the agenda?
Well, we have three pieces for this opening. We start with a piece by the English composer Julian Anderson, written in 2002, called Imagined Corners. And this is a piece that uses five French horns in a very kind of festive and fanfarish way. They're standing in lots of different places in the hall, and they move around during the piece. So this gives the audience a kind of surround sound effect. Then we come to an audience favorite, Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto, one of the most beloved pieces in the repertoire, and we welcome a really fantastic soloist, Inon Barnatan, Israeli soloist who lives in New York and who is the artist in association with the New York Philharmonic. So one of the things that we've been trying to do is to really start to bring world-class guest artists to Jacksonville on a more frequent basis.
Yeah, you've really raised the bar. And in addition to the talent on stage, you're raising the bar sartorially, I guess. Guests are encouraged to dress to impress. Is this black tie, or what should people wear?
Well, last year some people did wear black tie, and there were some ball gowns, and there were lots of suits. So it's up to you. It's a fun opportunity to get dressed up and have a bit of fun. Mm-hmm. And then those concerts end with Stravinsky's score to the ballet The Rite of Spring, which is an iconic masterpiece, maybe the most influential music of the whole 20th century, a piece that caused a riot at its first performance in 1913 because it was so modern and so dissonant and told such a violent story. And the Jacksonville Symphony hasn't performed it for nearly 30 years, so we're delighted to be able to present this next weekend.
Did you personally choose all of these pieces?
Yes, I did.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so in addition to the opening of that series, that's Friday, September 30th, at Jacoby Hall, you are also, for the second year in a row, providing some free community concerts, three free concerts in October. How is this going to play out, and how did this idea come about?
Well, last year we wanted to do something which was a gift to the community at the beginning of my time as music director. And we played at Unity Plaza. We offered a free concert at Jacoby Hall. And this really created a wonderful atmosphere of the orchestra being out of the hall and in the community and reaching different audiences. So we wanted to continue that this year. So we'll be playing at Jacksonville Beach for the first time in a long time, the very first time ever at Bethel Baptist Church. And also we'll be providing a free concert at Jacoby Hall. And this program is very popular. It starts with Dvorak's Carnival Overture. We have a light suite by Stravinsky, and then Beethoven's Fifth, possibly the most famous piece of music that there is. So this is a great way for us to encourage people who maybe don't come to the symphony during the season as a way of trying it out and seeing if you like it.
You have been working in a lot of ways to bring younger people into the symphony. The Symphony in 60, for example, where people can come just for an hour. Programs like that, do you think they're moving the needle with more millennial and younger listeners?
Well, we had a really great audience reception to Symphony in 60 last year. We did three concerts. And, you know, for a new concert series to begin from scratch and to be selling as well as that was by the end of the season was great, so much so that we're increasing it from 3 to 4 concerts this year. So that's in January, February, March and April at 6:30. And that's an hour-long concert with cocktails before and afterwards and an opportunity to meet the musicians and me on stage after the concert. So I'm really happy that that's continuing to grow. The Masterwork series also, we decided to move it from 10 weekends to 12 this year. So there's a lot of expansion in the programming at the orchestra, which I'm very excited about.
Well, kudos on all the success. It's exciting to see another season get underway, and thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure.
The Jacksonville Symphony, under the baton of music director Courtney Lewis, will open its 2016-17 Florida Blue Masterwork series Friday night, September 30th at Jacoby Hall at the Times Union Center. Get your tickets at jacksymphony.org. You can also go there to learn about a series of free fall concerts. And we'll be right back.
Concert highlights on the way from the 2016 Proms in London and from the New York Philharmonic at Lincoln Center. Plus, composer Bruce Adolph joins us with this week's musical game, our piano puzzler. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT, 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
Do you have music you want people to hear? Do you have an artistic vision you want to share? Then join these winners in The Square. The Square is an online venue where artists share their work with the community and compete for a chance to be featured on WJCT-TV and radio. Submit your work now through September 30th. To learn more about The Square and to submit your work, visit wjct.org/thesquare.
Well, finally, this hour, the use of animals for therapy is a growing field in so many aspects. A really cool event is coming up Saturday, an expo, a free expo for pet owners interested in therapy animal training, letting your pet give comfort and hope to someone else. Right now, to tell us about it, we welcome Christy Leonard, co-chair of the Therapy Animal Expo, and Mary Harvey with the group North Florida Therapy Animals. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Mary, this is the first expo of its kind, I think, to be held in Jacksonville. Is that right?
It is. The Northeast Florida Therapy Animal Group is the first of its kind as well. We've just come together to try to coordinate all these groups and decided to have this expo.
Now, we're very excited because, Christy, you brought an incredible pet with you today, a golden doodle. Sunday is lying on the ground here in the studio after we all pet him and loved on him. He's the most beautiful dog.
Thank you.
He's a therapy animal.
He is a therapy animal. He volunteers over at the Mayo Clinic.
How does this work? How do you take a Sunday or a dog or animal like him and bring him to people who can benefit from just being around him?
Well, the first thing that people need to understand is the difference between a therapy dog and a service dog. So service dog is someone who serves, a dog that serves one handler. A therapy dog is a dog that serves many people. Mm-hmm. And so it's people like me who had a pet that was absolutely outstanding, and I went and had training done for basic training, you know, all the sit and the down and the sort of basics. And then we go and get the extra training for therapy work.
And what does that entail? How do you put your pet through those kind of paces?
Well, there's two programs in town. I run one of them called Pet Partners Jax. For our organization, we are partnered with a national organization called Pet Partners. And they start with the handler end, where we're training the handler on how to do pet therapy. And it's really about teaching you how to be proactive and understanding the types of things that you're going to come in contact with. And then they get an evaluation where they are evaluated.
And if you think your pet might be good at this, Mary, you want everyone to come to the event, which is coming up Saturday. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, can you share with me a little bit about the data behind this? Because people that have brought pets into schools, hospitals, senior centers, all manner of settings, the effect can be pretty miraculous, is what I understand.
It is. There's a lot of data that shows that having a pet, a friendly pet, a non-judgmental pet with you can help you, helps lower your blood pressure, helps you relax, helps you have peace of mind. So people in hospitals, people in nursing homes, children in school trying to learn to read, students in colleges who are facing exam week. We even had a recent one where a company called us to come on a day that they were declaring their building a smoke-free campus, and we took dogs in for people to pet and hug on because they were having to give up their cigarettes, and they were stressed. So there's a lot of scientific evidence that dogs can help in all of those kinds of stressful situations. And you petted Sunday a little while ago, and I think your stress level went down significantly.
Yeah.
Mine did, I know.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
How an animal, even just the proximity to one,
absolutely
can change the whole mood of a room or a person in that room.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah. We can tell. We'd go to the surgery waiting in the Mayo Clinic, and, you know, those are people who are sitting there all day waiting for their loved one. And as soon as you walk in the room, you can just feel the tension rise. It's really neat.
Now, you even use therapy animals to help young people who are unfortunately caught up in the court system through the guardian ad litem program.
There is. Yeah.
There are so many applications for this.
It's unending. I think the number of programs that are growing in the area is another reason why we decided to start the Northeast Florida Therapy Animal Organization, because not only are there people who want to do this, but there are so many applications and programs that would like to get started. And so we'll have a speaker talking about that at the Therapy Animal Expo on Saturday.
So let's talk about this. This is a free program. It's coming up at 10 o'clock on Saturday. Anyone who has an interest in this, whether they have a pet that they'd like to maybe use to help others, or whether there's an organization, how can people be part of this program?
Well, if you have a pet and you think you'd like to get into animal-assisted therapy and want to know how to train and what the tests are you need to take, or if you have an organization, say you have a school and you want to get read therapy into the school, or you have a company where you think your workers are too stressed, or any kind of program like that, we're going to have people there to talk about how you can start a program. You can't just go out and invite a bunch of friends of yours to come in and bring their dog. So, you know,
that's not going to work.
You really have to go through some steps. One of the biggest issues in this day and age is the issue of safety, and knowing that the pets and the handlers are well-trained and therefore insured for what's going on. So it's important that you talk to the experts and listen to the experts and get the right training. And we're going to have a whole wide range of experts, both exhibiting information and ready to answer questions, and we'll also have speakers and panels to give a wide range of information. So it's just a great place to get one place to get a lot of resources, no matter what it is you want to know.
Sure.
Yeah, in addition, anybody who is already doing pet therapy, many of the local programs will be there. So if you maybe haven't done it for a while, or you're ready for a new gig, then you can go out and see all of those organizations and find a new place to volunteer.
You'll also have a keynote speaker, the Reverend Elizabeth Teal. She's a leader in working with therapy animals. And so if you're interested in this, this is coming up Saturday, 10 o'clock, at Community Hospice of Northeast Florida. That's it, 4266 Sunbeam Road. And it's open only to humans,
yes.
Unless you have a service dog, so don't bring your dog.
Right, yeah.
Okay, yep. Important to note
There's
that.
There's just not quite enough space.
Well, it's a wonderful idea, and thank you for bringing Sunday in. That really brightened all of our day.
Absolutely.
He's a good dog.
Thank you.
Again, it's the first ever Therapy Animal Expo this Saturday at Community Hospice on Sunbeam Road. And Christy Leonard and Mary Harvey, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers this morning. Michelle Corum runs the board. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. And the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and our WJCT app. And next on Diane Rehm, in the first presidential debate, Donald Trump said he was smart not to have paid federal taxes. Tax exemptions for individuals. Who pays, who doesn't, and why? That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.